break. So, right on, is it? Yeah.
No, he's got to hit the last word.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, let's resume. Item number 11, North of Falcon Policy Review. This is a briefing and public hearing. So, Kyle, I will turn it over to you, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Directors. I am Kyle Eddix, Intergovernmental Salmon Manager for the FISH Program. I'm here this morning to brief you on your North of Falcon policy. The current policy is a two-year policy that expires on December 31st of this year. Just an outline of what I'll go through today. I'll give you a briefing on the current policy. If you want to sort of follow along, the current policy is on page two, what's labeled page two of your packet for this agenda item. We'll talk briefly about potential modifications for the new policy, go through the schedule for consideration of a new policy, and seek your guidance on changes you might like to see as we move forward. So this sort of overarching guidance from the policy is just that we're going to follow all of the rules, regulations that we need to follow for the policy to work. That includes the department statutory authority, the U.S. v. Washington and U.S. v. Oregon court cases, the Endangered Species Act, the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan, the Pacific Salmon Treaty, the Pacific Fishery Management Council's Management Plan for Salmon, the assorted state tribal agreements with our co-managers, and of course with the Fish and Wildlife's other applicable policies. The policy gives general guidance to the department when planning and managing our salmon fisheries. Those include basic conservation principles, guidance on how to provide harvest opportunity, guidance on how to conduct in-season management, monitoring and sampling, enforcement and compliance, how to deal with gear and fishery conflicts, accounting for incidental mortalities, and communications with the public as we move through our pre-season and in-season processes. The policy states that the department will implement, consistent with the 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Initiative, that our decisions will be science-based, well-documented, transparent, well-communicated, and accountable, and that we will meet or exceed our ESA recovery and conservation goals. Moving into some of the specifics, as we provide fishing opportunities, we're instructed to be provided where they can be directed at healthy, wild, and hatchery stocks. We're directed to use selective methods and gears to maximize fishing opportunities and minimize impacts on depressed stocks. And from a statewide perspective, the fishing directed at each species will not be exclusively reserved for either sport or commercial users. Specific to the recreational opportunities, we're told to distribute the opportunities equitably across fishing areas and to reflect the diverse interests of fishers, including retention and catch and release fisheries. From there, the policy gets into some sort of regional specific issues. For Puget Sound, for Chinook and Coho stocks, our objectives in priority order are to provide meaningful recreational opportunities and then to identify and provide opportunities for commercial harvest. It's got some specific language on Lake Washington sockeye. It says that the first 200,000 Lake Washington sockeye available for non-treaty harvest will go to recreational fisheries. And it says for Puget Sound origin pink salmon that will provide meaningful opportunities to both recreational and commercial fisheries while minimizing conflicts between those. And for the commercial side, Fraser origin chum, pink, and sockeye stocks, the majority of harvest goes to commercial fishers. And for Puget Sound origin chum stocks, the majority of the harvest goes to the commercial fisheries. Historically, there was information on other regions. A lot of that you guys have moved into separate policies, so this policy simply points to the Grays Harbor and Willapa policies for those fisheries. You'll be getting a briefing later today on the Willapa Bay policy. And similarly for the Columbia, which you spent a lot of time discussing yesterday, it points to that Columbia River policy. And for ocean fisheries, it points to the Pacific Fishery Management Council's Framework Salmon Management Plan, which again has specific allocations and guidance for setting seasons in ocean fisheries. One of the changes you made to the policy the last go-round was the in-season management section. After 2016, where we had some pretty dire coho forecast but saw some better returns once the fish started showing up, we made a lot of changes in season, opening some fisheries that had expected to be closed. So there was interest in documenting during North of Falcon what our in-season update models look like and what actions we might take. So the in-season management section says that we'll implement in-season actions consistent with pre-season conservation and harvest management objectives and the fishery intent developed at North of Falcon. But then it says that we'll do some specific documentation of the in-season update methods. We include those in our list of agreed fisheries with the tribes, include both the methods and what actions we might take if we see changes to the run sizes in season. There's general language on monitoring and sampling that will monitor fisheries to provide account for species and population impacts of all fisheries, and that fishery participants will be required to comply with fishery monitoring. Obviously, we set the seasons, but we have to go out and monitor, make sure we see what's happening once we implement them, account for the wide range of stocks and species we encounter in our mixed stock fisheries. Some general language on enforcement and compliance. We'll develop strategies and staffing to promote compliance, and that will establish and maintain effective coordination with tribal enforcement. Gear and fishery conflicts. We will structure fisheries to minimize gear and other fishery conflicts. And if we have conflicts arise, they'll be resolved by involving the appropriate sport and commercial representatives in a dispute resolution process managed by department staff. Ideally, we plan the fisheries so that those conflicts don't arise, but if they do, we will deal with them. Incidental mortalities. We'll design fisheries that minimize mortalities on non-target species such as rockfish, seabirds, and we'll limit seabird mortalities consistent with the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Again, this is where the monitoring and sampling is critical to make sure that the measures we put in actually are minimizing those mortalities. Another section that received a lot of attention last time you guys looked at this policy was communications. The policy says that we'll make ongoing improvements for effective public involvement during the North of Falcon planning process and fishery implementation, that we'll include participants as observers during appropriate state tribal meetings, we'll record decisions in writing, we'll use a variety of tools to communicate effectively, and that we'll consult with stakeholders prior to making major decisions with the co-managers. The first bullet there is one that got a lot of discussion last time, a lot of interest from the public in attending our state tribal meetings. We haven't been able to get non-treaty participants in those meetings. Last year, we did have a plenary session at the Linwood North of Falcon meeting where a lot of tribal representatives came in. A lot of our constituents were there and had a sort of general discussion session on all the issues our fisheries face. It was, I thought, very well received by the tribes and by the public and was a good step. So we'll be looking at things like that as we move forward.
Yeah, Kyle, just a question on that. As you mentioned, last year there was a lot of discussion from one group in particular. I have not heard anything since then. Is that group individual quieted down?
That person has quieted down. I'm not exactly sure what happened. Maybe it was getting the consistent message that last time Bill Fryermayer gave a briefing to you guys on the legalities of all of that. But he did at least quiet down. I don't know that he's completely gone away. But
Joe, have you heard from him?
He's ill.
Okay. Yes.
Kyle, I'm glad you mentioned the session that took place in Linwood. That satisfied a lot of people. It was very positive. I thought it was an important gesture by the tribes to reach out and demonstrate some ability to communicate. I don't anticipate changes at the meetings that take place later on, but that was a very positive step, and I heard a lot of good comments about that. So I hope that does take place again this year. Quick question, the North of Falcon meetings, you know, they often rotate from Washington or Oregon to California. Do you know where the meeting will take place this year?
This year, and I'll just go to the next slide, which was to show you the list of public meetings we had last year. So we're all over the state talking to constituents, trying to involve them in making all of these decisions. The North of Falcon process is sort of centered around the two Pacific Fishery Management Council meetings in March and April. This year, the March meeting will be in Vancouver, Washington. The April meeting will be in Rohnert Park, California. So it's less than ideal when we have to go to California for that second meeting. We don't have as many constituents there, but that's the schedule for next year.
But I'm certain you'll continue the format that I feel has been adequate, where as soon as we leave our co-managers' meetings, we do go into a stakeholder room that's populated by the concerned, not citizens, but stakeholder groups, and convey the conversation immediately after those take place. I want to assure the public that is the circumstance, and they know as much as we do immediately following those meetings. So I assume that will continue.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, that is the plan. And in addition to coming back from those meetings and meeting with the constituents that were there, we make efforts multiple times a day to tie in people back at home via conference call. So we'll be continuing to do those things to make sure people know what we've heard, where we are, and where we might be headed.
Yes, Commissioner Baker.
Kyle, assuming that this year or next year's schedule will look something like this year's, we, as you know, spent all day yesterday working with Oregon Commission on Columbia River policy. Is there do you have a suggestion about when we should complete whatever we're going to do for next year? Does that feed into this, is my question. Do we have some timelines that we need to be aware of?
Thank you, Commissioner. It definitely feeds in. The sooner we know what our sideboards are, the better. We'll have, and I know no one can read all of the meetings on that list, but we will have a couple of meetings typically in this area that are sort of joint Washington, Oregon, Columbia River with a little bit of ocean discussion meetings. And those meetings aren't real effective if no one quite knows yet what our objectives are. So the sooner the better. As we move into March, we start having these meetings, and the faster we can push things along, the better, so that we're not second week in April still trying to figure out where we need to be.
Commissioner Carper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kyle and Ron and David, I just want to clarify one point that you made. When we come out of those state tribal meetings, even as commissioners, we have to temper what we say to the stakeholders. We can't give them a full download, because that will not work. And that's what happened with some of the observers in years past that were in the meetings. They went into this non-tribal stakeholder meeting. So I just want to make sure that we're not 100% available to tell everything that goes on. I don't know if you want to speak to that, Kyle or Ron, but I just want to make sure that we respect that.
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. Yes, we obviously have to think about how we describe the state-tribal interactions and not misinterpret the viewpoints of the tribes. So careful with how we give those downloads.
Commissioner Keogh,
thanks. So, Kyle, I'd just like to follow up on Commissioner Baker's question. We're going to discuss this tomorrow in conjunction with our future meeting planning schedule and the Columbia presentation. So, you know, we were kind of talking amongst ourselves a little bit yesterday, February, March. I understand the earlier the better, but would March be too late then, or would that still give enough time for substantive discussions among user groups?
Thank you, Commissioner Kehoe. I actually haven't looked at when the March Commission meeting falls on the calendar. The process has to be wrapped up by the end of the Pacific Council meeting in April, so there is still time in the last half of March, first half of April, for things to settle out. But
looking at Tammy.
March
March 1st and 2nd. So, you know, you've got the 2018 schedule, but I imagine, you know, it's pretty much the same each year. But, I mean, I guess my suggestion, you know, we'll have our discussion tomorrow, and then hopefully then you can, whatever we decide what to do as far as timing, maybe you can tailor your meeting schedule to with that in mind. Just a suggestion. So,
thank you, Commissioner. With the commission meeting being that early in the month, it will actually precede the March council meeting and most of the meetings that will be on the 2019 schedule. So that's a good thing.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this presentation is on the policy document that has last scanned 2 years. So it's as a matter of ongoing principles as opposed to what would the issues be for 2019. And so to follow up on Commissioner Baker's comment, this has in here a lot of general principles that are probably applicable for many years. The two of them that have to do with policies that are kind of in question include follow the Columbia River policy forever. Follow the Willapa policy forever until amended. And so maybe, I know we have public comment on this, so maybe I'll just withhold a perspective of input to this presentation on the long-term policy until after public comment. But maybe those two need some special attention in terms of what's on this. Well, I'm getting ahead of your presentation. You'll talk about what's to come for commission decision-making on this particular matter.
Lastly, the policy does have a delegation of authority, and the commission delegates the authority to the director to make harvest agreements with the Northwest Treaty Tribes and other agencies, and to adopt permanent and emergency regulations resulting in those agreements. Moving on to potential modifications to the policy for its renewal. Again, last time you guys looked at this, you made some housekeeping changes, you added some in-season update language, and the previous policy still, the Willapa Bay policy hadn't been completed, so it didn't point at that. So we changed that to point at that Willapa Bay policy. Moving forward to a 2019 to 2020 policy, first, this assumes that you guys want to look at another two-year policy. It's been a two-year policy for as long as I've been involved. I don't know that there's anything magic about that, but that's what they have been in the past. For the Puget Sound section, for sockeye, there's a specific reference to a 200,000 non-treaty harvestable threshold. For those of you that have tracked Lake Washington sockeye, we haven't had run sizes of 200,000, much less a non-treaty share of 200,000. The policy's silent on other sockeye in Puget Sound. Baker's actually been a more consistent fishery than Lake Washington in recent. down the road, there could be Skokomish sockeye with that reintroduction project. So we thought it might make sense to consider eliminating that specific Lake Washington reference and simply identify that Puget Sound origin sockeye are a recreational priority. We generally don't have large harvestable numbers of sockeye. They go to recreational fish. Puget Sound origin sockeye go to recreational fisheries. So that was something we thought that might make sense. The process for your review and renewal, obviously you're receiving a briefing today and hoping to get some input from you guys as well as the public on potential changes. At your December meeting, we'll bring back probably a revised draft, what it might look like, take additional public comment, look to you guys for additional guidance for a revised draft. And after that meeting, we would post a revised draft online for the public to comment on. And then we would be back in January of next year for you to consider adopting a new policy. So again, the current policy expires at the end of this year. We don't have a lot of ideas for big changes. Gave you one to think about for sockeye and Puget Sound, but would look to you for guidance on how to move forward.
Thank you, Kyle. Any questions? Yeah. Commissioner Holzmiller.
Thank you, Chair. And this is not a question, it's a comment. I just want to thank you for making this rudimentary North of Falcon for Dummies or Cowboys, whatever you want to call it, because for the first few years, it was all just, oh, North of Falcon, you're supposed to assume you knew everything about it, and it's really good that you bring us back, show us the whole process, and thank you for not using acronyms to actually use what the words were. So just a thanks. It was really good for me to get a good grounding on what the whole process is and how it works again. So thank you, God.
You're amazingly agreeable today. And
Don't get used to it.
Did Dr. Thumber medicate you earlier?
Comment, Brad.
Yes. Commissioner Carpenter.
I just want to thank Kyle for doing this. I would throw out sort of reverse role here for a little bit. I know that you and Ron and Kelly and others that on staff that participate in this process for decades probably have some other ideas that would be beneficial to our constituent slash customer base and the resource that I personally would welcome hearing them at your convenience, because I know you folks work on this on a daily basis. We work on it about 10 days a year, and if you have those, I'd think it'd be valuable for us to hear them.
Thanks, Commissioner. I guess we probably spend, I won't say the most time, we spend a lot of time thinking about the communications part of it and how do we take this extremely complex process with all of the constraints we're in, involve the public, make the decisions, the constituents who follow us through the process. They might not always agree, but they understand. But I think there are a lot of other people out there that don't know it all well enough to agree or understand. So that's one we really struggle with, is how do you take this and make it digestible for your average fisherman out there?
That's great, because, you know, as the stakeholders get involved out of frustration or desire or whatever the case may be, they quickly feel like they're being led down a hallway with no doors. And if we could improve that in some fashion, so there are a couple doors, I think that would be healthy for all.
Other questions? Thank you, Kyle. We do have some public input on this, too. So I'll call Greg King and Robert, please.
Again, last year was the first year I participated in North of Falcon in the Columbia River at Ridgefield, and I thought staff put on a great presentation, made it clear what was going on. My observations were that we had about five models that were different models. Ones were short season, two fish limit, whatever it was. I can't remember them all. But there was one that was a 2 o'clock closure for sports. And I know a lot of people didn't like that, but with the low amounts of Chinook encounters, I think that it was a good idea, but it didn't make it because there was some, and I think I'm going to go under the monitoring, sampling, and enforcement and compliance. One of those two, because there would be a lot of people coming back to the docks around 2 o'clock, and how are we going to sample the fish, and was there enough enforcement there? And I had suggested that we look at using some Columbia River endorsement money to maybe staff that. If we come up on that problem again this year, I just kind of recommend that to the staff to maybe look into that, you know, at that too, because we might end up being that same way again this year. I don't know what the numbers are going to look like for that. And then kind of touching on the tribal thing that Commissioner Carpenter was talking about, that they couldn't go out to the public and tell everything. Well, I think that we had five models, and it got out in the public, and that there was going to be such a catastrophe at Buoy 10. They were going to close the fishery down early, and it got out on social media, and people started canceling motel hotels, guides, charters, and it got a little bit out of hand. we can kind of control the constituents to not get out there and put this out so you get everybody in a panic that Buoy 10's going to blow up and we're not going to have a fishery, you know. Because those communities depend on that fishery. And those might be some recommendations to staff that they kind of, you know, keep it calmed down a little bit. And I got to give a big shout out to Ron Gardner up there in Puget Sound for extending his hand to the tribes. Thank you.
Yes.
You had mentioned that you thought there was the potential of using Columbia River endorsement funds for a Puget Sound.
No. For the monitoring and sampling, they didn't have enough staff to check fish checkers and
that was
enforcement
Buoy 10 fishery.
At Buoy 10 Fishery.
Right.
If it was a 2 o'clock closure, I wanted the 2 o'clock.
Yeah, the use of those funds are fairly specific, and so
yeah, if we can, it was a good idea, but we just couldn't do it in the time we had to try to go and get money because it was coming up in the summer. So if we all could right, look into you. That before, thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Robert.
Thanks again, Commissioners and Director. I've been attending the North of Falcon meetings for about 10 or 12 years, and I think it's a good system. I like it because people show up, and everybody gets a little bit something out of it. It's a much better way to negotiate sharing harvests. Everybody hears what everybody's needs are, and every time we went, I felt like it was a positive thing. So I like the North of Falcon process. And in regards to your meeting with Oregon, North of Falcon doesn't address spring Chinook. And so if you're going to do anything with Oregon regarding spring Chinook and the potential for us to have some access of some sort, it needs to happen a little earlier. North of Falcon really doesn't play into spring Chinook harvest. In terms of fishery management, the comment about utilizing selective methods and gears to maximize fishing opportunity, I'd like to see something in there about optimizing harvest. I mean, this involves trying to catch the fish that are available. And so when we talk about methods and gears and time and area, all those things play into making use of the harvest. And I don't see that in that statement. Underneath it talks about from a statewide perspective, fishing directed at each species will not be exclusively reserved for either group. Just think about what we have left for Chinook in Washington. No, there's sport priority in Puget Sound. The fishery in the San Juans has to let them go. We have a little bit of trolling on the coast. There's no more Chinook harvest in Grays Harbor. There's no more Chinook harvest to speak of in Willapa. There's a little bit on the Columbia. How are you sharing that equitably for both fisheries? Same thing for coho. I mean, there's almost no coho harvest commercially in Washington anymore. The trollers trade it for Chinook to the sports fishery. I don't think you're living up to that, and the river policy is a perfect example. On the next couple slides, provide meaningful opportunities for pink salmon for both groups. It's a lottery system for commercial fishermen in Puget Sound on abundant years. The buyers, it's such a small fishery anymore that the buyers, fishermen struggle to find buyers to take the fish. You've beaten that down so far. We just don't have much of a fishery there anymore. On the next slide, Fraser River. We only have a Fraser River fishery that's meaningful about once out of every 4 years now. Another, that's from the Pacific Salmon Treaty. We gave a good portion of that away. So there really isn't much of a fishery for non-Indians in Puget Sound for anything except for chum anymore. And this idea about removing the Puget Sound threshold, I object to that in principle. That we're constantly turning these fish into sport priority fish. That's a public resource. I know that we haven't fished commercially on those for 20 or 30 years. But the fact that that's any kind of a reason to not ever let us have a fishery is meaningless to me. I'm not looking for a Baker Lake fishery, but I did fish commercially in the past on Lake Washington fish. There were a few years when we had enough. I don't see any reason why the public shouldn't have access to some of those. 200,000 is a pretty good size run. You share it with the tribes, share it with the public on all of these species.
Two items, Robert, in all due respect. Puget Sound Chinook are all ESA listed. Affects everybody. Any user group. The other significant commercial fishery for Chinook that you failed to mention was Bellingham Sandwich Bay.
Yes.
So I just didn't want you to leave that out.
No, you're right. There is a fishery at Samish Bay. It's been there for a lot of years, and there is that fishery. But it's also the mouth of the river. I don't really consider that to be a quality fishery compared to what I used to be able to catch in the San Juans.
Well, that's because of mixed stock and terminal area. So.
And Chinook and Coho and Sockeye were made sport priority in Puget Sound almost 25 years ago. This isn't an ESA listing that caused this. This happened through the commission process soon after the Department of Fisheries was combined. It wasn't this commission, but those are the kind of decisions that have been affecting our fishery for decades. And that's why I don't like seeing additional steps like this.
Other questions? No. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
That concludes public input. Yes, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of thoughts for the commission here on advice for the next draft or guidance for to show up in the next draft that would go out for public comment, and then maybe a question about just the 2019 process. So as Commissioner Baker indicated earlier, the Columbia River policy, which let's see, where is it? It's in here. It says, there it is, slide number 10. Managed consistent with the Willapaw Bay policy, I guess slide number 11, managed consistent with the Columbia River policy. So we've got the Willapaw policy coming up here on our agenda today, and I think it shows up at our year at a glance as coming up again two or three times over the course of the winter. Last spring, we offered some guidance just for 2018 that had a little bit different business than is in the existing policy. And it looks to me like the presentation is calling for the commission to take a look at the policy and perhaps make some adjustments. If that is true, then putting forward a document that says managed consistent with a policy that's in flux and might not be completely defined would seem a little strange. So I'm not sure how to word this to say managed consistent with the current state of the policy or suspended if it's under complete revision or something like that. But it applies to the Columbia River one as well. So for a policy that's going to last for 2 years or maybe 3 years, maybe there ought to be some consideration for longer than 2 years because it's all very high general policy level stuff here, that the Columbia River policy seems like it's just some sort of an administrative snag here. We either have to deal with it in this policy or deal with the Columbia River policy and say, don't use this for 2019 if it's still under revision. So I'm not sure how to clarify that little snag for public comment, but maybe you can keep it alive. Your schedule, according to slide number 21, says that we're to make a final decision on this in January, and we're not going to be scheduled to make a final decision on the Columbia River business in January, nor Willapaw in January. So we got a little bit of a timing snag there. One thing that we heard after the end of last year had to do with the tribal non-tribal sharing in Puget Sound not being at the 50-50 level, and it was something quite a bit different than that. And there's nothing in this policy that says manage tribal, non-tribal fisheries at the 50-50 level. It does say manage consistent with U.S. v. Washington, manage consistent with U.S. v. Oregon, which has some sort of a base 50-50 sharing principle there, but I don't believe it locks anything into 50-50. So if there's just an understanding that the base principle out there to start things with is encompassed in slide number 3 already under the umbrella of U.S. v. Washington and U.S. v. Oregon, then maybe that's fine. But maybe if not, I think that some of those folks that were disturbed about 75-25 sharing last year on so many Puget Sound stocks might be reassured that as we start a North to Falcon process, we're not starting at 75-25 or something like that. Mr. Sudar's comment about optimizing fishing is another kind of high elevated policy goal that's not in here. and on page 4 for fishery management, meaningful recreational fishing opportunities. There isn't a slide 7.5 that says provide for meaningful commercial fishing opportunities. So I think distributing commercial fishing opportunities across the interest of fishers, including everything else in the world, is an admirable high-level goal as well. So depending on what the commission members here think, it would seem like that would be a good high-level principle to put out for public review. And lastly, on the matter of what to do for 2019, so this is adopted as a long-term policy in January. There's these emerging issues for 2019 that will become apparent when the run size forecasts come out. There's a couple that are lingering from last year. The one we've heard the most public testimony on is this Skokomish matter, where there has not been any non-tribal fishing on the Skokomish in the freshwater environment, and the sharing formulas are something quite a bit different than even 75-25, as I understand it. So I guess a question, when does something like that come up? There had been some consideration of looking into that, the issues that are behind the Skokomish sharing being so out of bounds over the course of the winter. And so it's not waiting for the forecast to the Skokomish River. It's more of a base principle. So I'm just not sure where that fits in this whole North of Falcon world and when that might come up for discussion, or if it's supposed to come up for discussion right here at this time. That's a question for you, and you're getting some help there on the, behind you there, too.
Chair Smith, Commissioner McIsaac, thank you. Ron Warren with the Fish Program. Relative to Skokomish, we are currently trying to meet with Skokomish Tribe, and I've been working with their natural resource director to try to have a face-to-face with Director Suswind and Chairman Miller, so that as a new commissioner or a new director, pardon me, enters into the position, they can have a face-to-face conversation about the issue and before we were to take a next step. And so that's on me, and we're working hard to get that set up so that that can occur so that we can then strategize what our next step is.
Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, I think it would be remiss if I didn't, Ron, maybe I don't want to dig into that issue any deeper. You guys have already talked about it. But could we get a report on the surplus out of that George Adams hatchery so we can have some documentation of cost-benefit on all these hatchery fish to be responsive to the public when they ask questions?
Chair Smith, Commissioner Carpenter, absolutely. We have that information summarized by surplus and disposition of fish at the end of every adult season. We'd probably have to wait until the first part of the year, but I could pull up previous years. Although the Skokomish in-river fishery has been quite high, so true is the surplus fish at the facility, and we'd want to show all of that. And then the partnership between the Skokomish tribe and the state in the FERC relicensing for Skokomish and the tribe being the main player in that, and their defense of us needing funds to pay for fish food and things like that as for that facility, important that I'd want the commissioners to remember as well.
Thank you. Yep.
Yes, Commissioner. Thanks. I'd like to address Commissioner McIsaac's comment regarding putting in the policy 50-50 sharing with the tribes. I been around the North of Falcon table for a lot of years now, and I do remember Phil Anderson always cautioning folks about really kind of on every single basin, every single fishery, insisting upon a 50-50 sharing. Because I think in the real world, we often find that in some instances, yes, I mean, the tribes do exceed 50%, but on other areas, the non-treaty fisheries catch more than 50%. And it's always a delicate negotiation balance in trying to maximize fishing opportunity in different areas. And so you end up, it's a delicate balance. And so I would not be in favor of putting that explicitly in the policy, but rather just simply managing under pursuant to U.S. v. Washington. It's you, and I really, and I assume that's still the case, but I do remember Phil Anderson used to stress that highly in talking with everybody. And, you know, I certainly it's frustrating. I know from in my own experience sometimes with respect to our chum fishery in Puget Sound, it's not, hasn't been 50-50. It's, in some areas it's we've gone over, and in for example, in the sockeye fishery this year, the non-treaty, not on purpose, but we did fish into the treaty share. And so I just want to caution everybody, because if we go down that route, if it's on paper, our constituents are saying you're not doing this pursuant to the policy. So that's a word of caution there.
All right, we're at the end. Yep. Thank you, gentlemen.